Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Antakoti Vaishnavinda ki jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai, Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana ki jai, Vrindavan Dhamma ki jai, Mathura Dhamma ki jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma ki jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma ki jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Maharani ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namaha Mishnu Dari Krishna Stadi Glacier Devakana Samavi Tami Namaste Sai Shadi Deva Gauranga Kachani Namaste Sandhani Vasita Adesatani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Utah Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavam Shashi Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam. Sadvaitam, Sadvadutam, Parijana, Sahita, Krishna, Chaitanya, Devam, Sri Radha, Krishna, Padam, Sahagana, Lavitam, Sri Shakam, Vitam, Shri. Panchakalpa, Sri Vishta, Kivasana, Vyavatam, Dichanam, Pavaneva, Vajnayam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
It's May 8th, 2014 in Golokadam, Germany. We're reading from Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 11, Universal Form, Text 39. Can you all see the verse? Vayur Yamognir Varuna Shashanka. Prajapatistvam prapita mahascha. Namo namaste stu sahasrakritva. Punascha bhuyopi namo namaste.
Prajapatistvam prapita mahascha.
Namo namaste stu sahasrakritva.
Punascha bhuyopi namo namaste.
Vayuryamognir Varuna Shashanka.
Prajapatistvam prapita mahascha.
Namo namaste stu sahasrakritva.
Punascha bhuyopi namo namaste.
Vayu. Air. Yama. The controller. Agni, fire. Varuna, water. Shashanka, the moon. Prajapatihi, Brahma, Twam, tu. Prapitamaha, the great grandfather. Cha, also. Namaha, my respects. Namaha, again my respects. Te, unto you, astu, let there be, sahasrakritva, a thousand times, punacha, and again, bhuyaha, again, api, Also namaha, offering my respects. Namate, offering my respects unto you. So this is Arjuna speaking to the universal form. You are air, and you are the supreme controller. You are fire, you are water, and you are the moon. You are Brahma, the first living creature, and you are the great grandfather. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you 1,000 times, and again, and yet again. Purport. The Lord is addressed here as air, because air is the most important representation of all the demigods being all-pervasive. Arjuna also addresses Krishna as the great-grandfather, because he is the father of Brahma, the first living creature in the universe. Vayur yamognir varuna shashanka prajapatistvam prapita mahascha namo namaste stu sahasrakritva punascha bhuyopi namo namaste. You are air, and you are the supreme controller. You are fire, you are water, and you are the moon. You are Brahma, the first living creature, and you are the great-grandfather. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you 1,000 times, and again, and yet again. So people ask all the time, how can I understand Krishna? How can I be meditating on Krishna when I'm living life in the world? How do I do that? Of course, Krishna's already told Arjuna to do this, Mam Anusmaram Yujitcha, in the 7th verse of the 8th chapter, right after Krishna said, Yam Yam Bhapi Smaram Bhavam, Tvajatante Kalevaram, Tam Tame Vaitikanteya Sadatad Bhava Bhavita. Whatever you think of at the time of death, that's where you will go. So then you have to just think of Krishna, Mam Anusmaram Yujitcha, think of me while you're fighting. So how are you going to do that? How are you going to think of Krishna while you're cleaning, while you're working, while you're driving, while you're taking care of your family, while you're managing a business? How are you going to do that? And here Arjuna in the 10th chapter was understanding how Krishna is the world, and here he's seeing Krishna as the world. You are air, you are fire, you are the moon, you are everything. So we're going to go through a list of the 5 gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and space. And for each of them, we're going to meditate on how these elements also demonstrate Krishna's qualities. And for each element, we're going to look at one of Krishna's opulences of wealth, strength, fame, knowledge, beauty, and renunciation. And we're going to look at some aspect of Krishna also in relation to each, like pastimes or form or abode. So in the Krishna book, chapter 14, Srila Prabhupada says, this is from the prayers of Lord Brahma, the existence of Maya is only within the mind. Maya is nothing but ignorance of your personality. When one forgets your personality, that is the conditioned state of Maya. Therefore, one who is fixed upon you both internally and externally is not illusioned. When we say that someone's in Maya, what we mean by that is that such a person is seeing things as disconnected from Krishna. As Krishna defines Maya in the Chaturshloka, he says, whatever appears to be a value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Okay, first we're going to meditate on earth. Now, earth literally means any matter that is in solid form. So that could mean this chair, the microphone stand, the building. For the purpose of this class, we're going to meditate on earth as the planet earth and as the soil of the earth. So one quality of the earth is that it's very solid. It's very dependable. We're always walking around on the earth, either directly or indirectly, and we don't think about, is it going to hold me up? We're not worried. We don't wake up in the morning, is the earth going to hold me up? We depend on it. So similarly, Krishna is very dependable. Rupa Goswami says that the demons know that they can depend on Krishna, that if they follow the rules of the scripture, he will not kill them. And it's explained there that the devotees They depend so much on Krishna's protection that they sleep with their doors open. And sometimes they even sleep in the courtyards of their houses because they're depending on Krishna. So whenever we walk on the earth, we can think of how Krishna is very dependable. Then, of course, Krishna says that he's the fragrance of the earth. So that is the smell of soil when you're working in the garden. And all of the fragrances, all of the perfumes and flowers, they're all pulling their fragrance from the earth. So, of course, Krishna has his own fragrance. Anybody know what Krishna's fragrance is? There's musk, and what else? Camphor and? Aguru and? Sandalwood, yes. So, Chuchusma, that has the four different fragrances. And when the residents of Vrindavan are walking around Vrindavan, they know where Krishna is or where he's been by whether or not his fragrance is in the air. It smells Krishna here. So sometimes Krishna is trying to hide, and the cowherd boys or the gopis, oh, no, Krishna's here. We can smell him. We can smell that fragrance. So whenever we smell any fragrance, any oils, any perfumes, any flowers, we can remember that Krishna is the ultimate fragrance. And then, of course, power. The earth is very powerful. If there's a volcano, an earthquake, everything can be destroyed in a moment. The very powerful earthquakes, you know, they only last for a few seconds. You know that, yes? When there's an earthquake, it doesn't last very long. Just a little. And immediately everything's finished. So Krishna also says, Kalosmi, time I am. Krishna just blinks his eyes and everything's finished immediately. This is a real problem for the materialistic persons. Although the earth is very dependable, it's supporting us, still at any moment everything can be finished. So although Krishna is very dependable, he's also, what does he say? I develop and devour all. And of course, the mountains are compared to the bones of the Lord. And the earth is not only is it dependable, but it's supporting us. And Krishna also talks about he is the support of everything. That when you go, what's supporting me, what's supporting me? Like even in a house. So here we're on a wooden floor, and the wooden floor is on something else, and finally on the earth. Even if you're on the top floors, eventually you're being supported by the earth. So whenever we're walking or sitting or standing, whatever, on a floor, lying down, on anything, on any surface that's supporting us, we can meditate on how the ultimate support is Krishna, right? Supporting the earth, that the earth is resting on the hoods of Anantasesha. But even in an ultimate sense, that whatever we have, yogakshema vahamyaham, whatever we have, whatever's being protected, is being ultimately done by Krishna, although we don't see it. Like when I'm in my room upstairs, I don't experience that I'm on the earth. Huh? I experience that I'm on a wooden floor. But actually, I'm being supported by the earth. So we may think, I'm being supported by my bank account, I'm being supported by my parents, I'm being supported by my husband, I'm being supported by this ISKCON temple, or, you know, I'm being supported by the government. But actually, we're being supported by Krishna. Whenever we think, oh, this is what is supporting me, we can realize that under all of that is Krishna. And of course, the earth is a sustainer. Practically everything that we need for our life is coming from the earth. Okay? All of our food, the products of our homes, our clothing, everything is coming directly or indirectly from the earth. And so when we see this, we can remember that ultimately Krishna is giving us everything. We may say, like here I have this chadar that's made out of wool. So wool is coming from the sheep, but the sheep are eating the grass, and the grass is growing from the earth. So really this is coming from the earth. And the same way, everything that I have, everything that's sustaining me, is ultimately coming from Krishna. And then the earth is the origin and the resting place of pretty much everything that we have. You know, our bodies are formed out of earth from the food that we eat, and when we leave this body, again it will go back to the earth. Either it will be buried and it will disintegrate and become earth, or be burned, become ashes, and go back into the earth, or some creature will eat it and pass stool that will go into the earth. So everything has come from the earth and goes back to the earth. And when we see this as we're walking, and we see that the earth is producing all the varieties of living bodies, and then we see how they're decaying. We see the old leaves decaying. We see the dead body of some creature going back into the earth. We can remember how ultimately everything is coming from Krishna. He's the beginning, the middle, and the end of all things. And then the earth is very satisfying. So here there's many devotees who work out in the garden. And it's a very satisfying, peaceful thing to do. If you haven't experienced it, I highly recommend it. For many, many, many years, I used to have my own garden growing vegetables, fruit trees, flowers, herbs. And it was the best de-stressor. You know, nowadays so many people are taking so many medications for many mental anxieties and depression and so forth and so on. Or people are taking, you know, alcohol and caffeine, or they're sitting in front of their monitors watching some movie to try to become peaceful. But all you have to do really is go out and plant some flowers if you want to become peaceful. It's quite interesting. You know, you just in a normal society where people are getting their food and fiber and medicine from the earth, so most people are spending their time out working with the soil. And it's extremely peaceful and satisfying. And whenever we find that peace and satisfaction from the earth, same if you just sit on the earth, if you just go out here on the grounds and you sit outside, immediately you feel peaceful. And the same way, whatever our anxieties, whatever our disturbances, as soon as we come to Krishna, we feel peaceful. As soon as we come to Krishna, we feel, yes, everything is all right. Very healing. And in a similar way, the earth is very grounding. I don't know if you have this word in other languages, but in English we have the word grounded. We use this for electricity, that all electricity has to be grounded. Sometimes on the plug, instead of two prongs, there'll be three, and the third plug is the grounding plug. And literally going into the earth, and if you want to have a home, a building secure from lightning, you have to have something going into the earth that stabilizes it. And we talk about being balanced and grounded in a figurative way. Again, that someone is peaceful, that someone is equipoised. I have to become grounded. You know, if you fly in an airplane, you literally feel ungrounded. Hey, we had this experience, especially if you take a long airplane trip, and then you feel kind of, we talk about it, you feel spaced out, you feel spacey, you're not grounded. So walking on the earth makes one feel very stable and very balanced. And in the same way, whenever we have that sense of stability walking on the earth, we can remember that Krishna is really our source of stability. Throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the devotee as being equipoised, as being equal in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, honor and dishonor, fame and infamy, equal to friends and enemies, seeing equally stones and pebbles and gold. So one gets this equilibrium and this balance from Krishna. Then, of course, the earth is the source of all of our shelter, like this building here. What is this building from? All of the materials of this building have come from the earth. So we have the wooden floor, the trees have come from the earth. We have even the plaster has come from the earth, the concrete, the stones. All the materials have come from earth. And whenever we feel sheltered, like yesterday it was raining, I went outside, I thought, let me go outside to chant my noon Gayatri. Oh, it's sunny, so I got on my sweater and I went outside in the sun and it started to rain. And I quickly ran into the shelter of the building. So whenever we feel sheltered, oh, it's cold outside, or it's hot outside, or it's raining outside, it's snowing outside, the wind is blowing, oh, but I can come in this building and feel sheltered. And the earth gives us shelter. We can remember that Krishna is our shelter, that whatever is happening, whenever we have that sense, oh, I'm inside, I'm like yesterday I was looking out the window, just watching the rain, but not being wet. And then immediately we can remember that when I come to Krishna's lotus feet, it is just like that. One is watching the rain, but not being wet. And then the earth provides for our artistic expression. It's from the earth that we get all the materials to make sculptures, out of metal or stone or clay. It's from the earth we get the colors to make paintings. So if the earth provides all this artistic expression. And whenever we see artwork, paintings, and sculptures, we can remember that Krishna is a supreme artist, that he is painting all of the flowers and the sunset, and that he is behind everything. And then the earth is the biggest thing we have in our experience. Of course, there are many planets that are larger, but they don't seem like that to us. But as far as what we are experiencing, our biggest object is the earth. And then we can remember, whenever we notice how large the earth is, that Krishna is the biggest. He's bigger than the biggest. He's Brahman. He's all expansive. And then, of course, we are always affected by gravity. Just like right now we are sitting down here, we're not floating in the sky. We're held to the earth. Right? Or people who haven't seen me for many years, sometimes they ask me, oh, have you lost weight? So I said, no. Actually, what's happened is just gravity is pulling my face down. You know what they do for plastic surgery, you know? They take your skin and they pull it up like this, right? Mm-hmm. As you get older, your face just sinks, and your just sinks, and your arms fall, everything falls. So when we notice gravity, that we're just walking, that we're not just floating in the air, how everything, you know, you're making those giwiks and you put them down, they stay down. They're not just floating away. Like the astronauts, they have this problem, right? They have to eat food out of tubes. If they try to just eat food, they pick it up on the fork or the spoon and then they would be flying in the sky. So they have to have tube food. Actually, one of my daughters-in-law, she likes to buy baby food in tubes. This is the latest thing now to feed her children. Instead of a little jar, you buy it in a tube and they can just suck the spinach and the tomatoes, whatever, out of the tube. So whenever we become aware of gravity, we can think that this attraction is actually Krishna. Krishna is the most attractive. We're being attracted to the earth. But this earth is just one little teeny, teeny, tiny planet in one very small universe in the whole creation. So how attractive is Krishna? How attractive is Krishna? He is the attractive force holding us to the earth. He's the attractive force holding the atoms together and so forth. And then we can think about the earth in terms of not only attraction in a physical sense, but attraction in a psychological sense. So almost everybody is very attracted to their homeland. This piece of dirt where I was born. So whatever piece of dirt my mother was on when I came out of her body, then I become very attached to that. That's my country. It's my place. It's such a strong thing. I was just talking to one devotee who was telling me how she lives in one country, but she's from another country. And she feels most comfortable when she's with people from her home country. And she was worried about this. And I said, well, that is natural. When we're with people from our home country, we share the same culture. We share the same understanding. But people are so attached to their homeland, they are willing to die for their homeland. Isn't that a fact? How many people voluntarily join the military? And they go to fight for the sake of that piece of earth, to defend that piece of earth from their enemies. And they go to battle, and in battle they may lose their arm. We have an expression in English, I would give my right arm for that. Something that you really want. Oh, I want that car so much, I would give my right arm for that. But in the military, people actually give their right arm. What are they giving it for? A piece of dirt. This is my homeland. So just imagine how attached we can be to Krishna. If we can be that attached, whenever you hear about wars, and that's pretty easy, all you have to do is look at the news for 2 minutes and you will hear about some war, correct? Somebody's fighting. Some soldiers are getting killed. Some soldiers are getting injured. Psychological problems. You can think, how attached could I be to Krishna? Now, these people are willing to sacrifice their own body for the sake of earth, a little piece of earth. So how attached could I be to the owner of the earth? So those are some of the qualities of the earth and how they can remind us of Krishna. And then I was feeling that earth can remind us of all of Krishna's six opulences, especially of wealth. Because almost all of our wealth comes from the earth. I mean, pearls come from the water, but generally speaking, wealth comes from the earth. Even our paper money comes from trees, which comes from the earth. Even our credit cards come from plastic, which comes from oil that comes from the earth. What to speak of the wealth of land and of food and of jewels, cloth, furniture. I know one devotee family that has all their wealth in furniture. You know, traditionally people used to keep their wealth in practical things that they could use. Nowadays we keep our wealth in little numbers on a computer screen. But people used to keep their wealth in land that they were using, in a home that they were using, in gold and jewels that the wife was wearing, in metal utensils that they were using. Anyway, I know this one devotee family, their wealth is in furniture. I visited their home, and every piece of furniture was an antique, solid wood, carved, absolutely gorgeous. I thought these people probably have $100,000, $200,000 just in furniture. So all of our wealth, pretty much all, almost all, comes from the earth. And this, any time we use any sort of money, just like in the Hare Krishna movement, we don't usually call it money, we call it Lakshmi. Right? So anytime we use even a plastic card or paper or metal coins or anything with wealth, we can remember that Krishna is the most wealthy. Right? Even wealth such as oil, right? Underground water, marble, stone is all wealth. And of course, the earth as our abode can remind us of Krishna's abode. Just like here is Golokadham. So we come here and we see here's the water and the trees and the flowers. And immediately we understand, oh, Krishna has such a nice abode. Krishna has such a nice abode. Chintamani Prakara Sadmashu Kalpraviksha Lakshabhate Susurabhiradi Paliyantam Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahmasevimanam. So this is Krishna's abode. And the earth can certainly remind us of that, how Krishna's abode is conscious, made of wish-fulfilling gems, and very personal. Krishna's abode is a person. Of course, even this earth is a person. This earth is Bhumi, who is the wife of the Lord. So what are some pastimes related to earth? Krishna's pastimes related to earth. Can anybody suggest? Govardhan Puja. So that's amazing, because there Krishna becomes earth. Krishna there is a piece of earth. He's a mountain. Okay, another pastime, yes. When Krishna was eating dirt, yes, and then of course he showed the whole earth and the universe in his mouth. Another pastime related to earth.
Krishna is also his incarnation?
Sure, any incarnation. Varaha, who picks up the earth. I was really meditating on that yesterday morning, how the demons were drilling into the earth. Prabhupada said, like today they drill for oil, and this drilling into the earth made the earth go out of its orbit. And the earth was down at the bottom of the Garbhadak ocean, and Lord Varaha comes, picks her up, puts her on the water. Yes?
Lord Chaitanya
was also eating dirt. Yes, and then he explained the difference between personalism and impersonalism philosophy. And of course, Krishna's footprints on the dirt. And the deity also is a form of Krishna as earth. So whatever form of the deity there is, whether marble or metal.
Actually, there is one version that Radharani also came from here.
Yes, Radharani also came from the earth, and Sita Devi, of course, Sita comes from the earth.
What's the appearance date, by the way?
Oh, today is the appearance day of Sita,
uh-huh.
Ramchandra Sita.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's why we are.
How wonderful! How wonderful!
And also Janava Mata.
And also Janava Mata. Very nice. Very nice. One of the wonderful things about our Vaishnava philosophy is that although we understand Adyam Purana Purusham, that Krishna is that the ultimate supreme is male, that still we have so many the female energy is there also. We don't deny the female energy. She's also there. Sita and Janavamata.
She also disappeared in the earth.
And she disappeared in the earth. She came from the earth and she went back to the earth. Whenever we see a big ditch in the earth, we can remember how Sita went into, how Sita was found in the earth and returned to the earth. And the earth, of course, is the wife of God. She's one of his wives, Bhumi.
Kubja's pastime also, huh?
Kubja, yes, that she's a manifestation of Bhumi. Yes. But also in Vrindavan, so which one of Krishna's consorts is a manifestation, has a, actually, her Bhumi is her manifestation. Satyabhama? No, Satyabhama is Radharani and Lakshmi. Rukmini. Who is also in Vrindavan Leela? Who's Rukmini in Vrindavan Leela? Chandravali, yes. We were just reading about her this morning from the Nectar Devotion. Who was reading Nectar Devotion this morning? Was you reading? Yeah? You remember what you read about Chandravali? You read it this morning. You read it 3 hours ago. What did you read? You cannot remember. Anybody who heard it, can they remember? No? Okay, that was from the chapter. What's the name of the chapter?
Mixing of rasas.
Mixing of rasas. And it was a mixture of conjugal, fraternity, and chivalry. Does that help you remember? Okay, so what was it? You read two mixing of rasas. You met one with Radharani, where Radharani was smiling, but she didn't want to smile so much in front of her superior, so it was conjugal and it was laughter, although I can't remember what she was smiling at. But the other one was with Chandravali. No? It doesn't help? You can't remember? Okay, so Krishna was looking at Chandravali with love, and he had his arm on one of his friends, I don't remember, I think it was Subal, and then he's roaring at Aristasura, also called Vrishasura. Vrisha means bull. So he's roaring at Vrishasura, ready to fight with him. Ah! So he's got his arm on. His friend, he's got his arm on his friend, and he's roaring at Subal, but he's looking at Chandravali. So she's Bhumi. That's described very nicely in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Gopakumar, we were reading Brihad Bhagavatamrita the other day, where Gopakumar, when he goes to Vaikuntha, he sees Lakshmi as Radharani, and he sees Sri as Radharani, and he sees Bhu or Dara as Chandravali. So we can also remember the earth like that, that the earth is a manifestation, that the personality of the earth, Bhumi, is also Rukmini, Chandravali, and Sita. The consort of the Lord. She's the wife of the Lord. And therefore, our interest in ecology is not just that we want a happy life on the earth, but that we want to respect the Lord's consort. So all of our interest in ecological living, simple living, we're dealing with our mother. We, you know, everybody says Mother Earth, but we really understand that the earth is our mother. She's the consort of the Lord. All right. Going to go on to water. Did you like that with the earth?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go on to water. And this is what started my meditation in this way. I was swimming in London, and as I was swimming, I was chanting. And as I was moving the water, I was thinking, this water is very soft, but it's also very powerful. I thought, just like Krishna, he's very soft and delicate, but he's very powerful. When he appears in Kamsa's arena, so the wrestlers saw him as very powerful, But some of the other participants say, oh, he's just this delicate little boy. And he's so soft that he just touches him and his skin changes color. So water's like that, very soft but very powerful. And of course, water is essential for health. If we don't have proper water, we get very sick. Having clean water, pure water available is one of the greatest necessities for life on this planet. And the same way, Krishna is essential for our spiritual health. If you have everything else but you don't have water, how are you going to be healthy? Is that possible? If you have dirty water, you have nice food to eat, you have clean clothes, you have a full medicine cabinet and good doctors and good hospitals, but polluted water, can you be healthy?
No.
So you can have everything, but without Krishna, you cannot have good spiritual health. And for cleanliness also. Right? Water is the essence of how we keep clean, how we keep our bodies clean, our food clean, our environment clean. In the same way, without Krishna, how can there be any purity? Everyone is attracted to purity, even actually the demons. Everyone is attracted to purity, to something that's real. Without water, you can't have purity. So whenever we are feeling clean, whenever we are enjoying getting clean in the shower, whenever we are enjoying having a clean room, a clean area, we can remember Krishna is the supreme clean. And water is very graceful. They often have fountains, right? The dancing of the water, the grace of the water. People come and watch the water. It's so nice. Out of the window of the room I'm staying, I see the stream with the graceful water, kind of like dancers, going over the rocks. Whenever we see water like that, we can think of how Krishna's the most graceful. And water is very refreshing. We talked about how earth is peaceful and satisfying and rejuvenating. So water is also very refreshing and rejuvenating. After we sleep, we want to have some contact with water. So Krishna also refreshes us from our ignorance and our illusion. And whenever we feel refreshed by drinking water or bathing in water or seeing water, we can remember that Krishna is the real refreshing source. But not only refreshing and stimulating, but also soothing and peaceful. Again, if you want to sit by a flowing stream. And of course, water, and we were talking about how it's soft but powerful. Water can wear down stone. You say little drops wear down stone. So over a period of time, just water dripping, 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 the stone is finished. So no matter how hard our heart is, how stone-like our heart is, if we're constantly in touch with Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then even our stone heart will eventually be melted. Huh?
I said hopefully.
No, not hopefully. Not hopefully, definitely. If you put a stone in the water, it is not hopefully. There's no hopefully.
Yeah, sometimes a long period.
Oh, it's not hopefully. It's like yesterday I was talking, my grandson's coming to Europe soon, and he was arranging with one place. He said, I want to arrive on this day. Can you pick me up? And they said, hopefully we can pick you up. So I said, you need to find definitely, not hopefully. So, no. If you put a stone in the water, it's not hopefully it will be worn down. Definitely it will be worn down. Absolutely, without any doubt. So no matter how hard, stone-hearted we are, if we are exposed to Krishna, definitely the stone heart will disappear. And water is very musical. There's always a nice sound of water. In fact, when Krishna jumped in Kaliya's lake, he was hitting the water, and the acharyas explained that this hitting of the water was creating musical sounds. And big bodies of water are very secretive. If you go to a big lake or the ocean, it looks just like, you know, a blank surface. But if you go under the water, especially if you go like with scuba gear or a snorkel, there's a whole world. Right? So Krishna is also very secretive. People don't understand that Krishna has his own world. I say, oh, there's God. God is great. But God has his whole existence and his whole world. And of course, Krishna talks about being the taste of water. And Prabhupada often talks about whenever we drink water, we can think this nice taste of this clean water, that is Krishna. And Prabhupada even said on several occasions that the person drinking liquor, if they are thinking the taste of this liquor is Krishna, eventually, he said, they'll become a saintly person. So if the drunkard who thinks of Krishna can become a saintly person, why only hopefully for you?
No, I was not thinking that.
But I mean, we should have that confidence, you understand?
I was thinking just generally, sometimes needs a lot of time.
Oh yeah, that may be. That may be. But then if you expose yourself to a lot of water, then it's not so much time. If you expose yourself just to one drop at a time, it takes a long time. But if you expose yourself to the waterfall, then very quick. And so this taste of this liquid, that's not only water, but all sense enjoyment is coming from water. Just like our eyes. In order to see, our eyes have liquid in them. One time on an airplane, one of my eyes dried out. It was so painful, I could hardly see. The airplanes are very dry. So in order to see, we have liquid. In order to hear, we have wax in our ears. Yes, we have some kind of lubrication in our nose. We have mucus. On our skin, we have oil. Without liquid, there's no taste, there's no pleasure. So whenever we experience any pleasure through our senses, we can remember, ah, that is Krishna. Now, water reminds me of Krishna's six opulences. It reminds me of fame, that very famous places in the world are often connected with water. And with earth, we thought of Krishna's abode. With water, I think of Krishna's lila. And that is because generally when people want to go on a vacation and play, they go to a place where there's water or snow. If you think of when people go for a vacation, they want to go by the ocean or by a river or by waterfall or by snow. And we very much associate water with being playful. And of course, Krishna really likes to play in the water also, as the youthful Krishna. So Krishna plays in the water at least four times a day. Krishna is bathing in water. He gets bathed in the morning, he gets bathed in the evening. In the middle of the day, he swims where? At Radhakund. And in the night, he swims where?
Yamuna.
In the Yamuna. And of course, he's swimming in so many other places. There's so many kunds in Vrindavan and so many leelas. And Krishna loves to play and swim in the water. He plays with the gopis, he plays with the cowherd boys, he takes the cows into the water. So whenever we see water, we can remember Krishna's many leelas. What are some pastimes related to water?
Kaliya.
Kaliya. Kaliya. That's such a great story because, you know, we admire dancers, but most dancers are dancing on a solid surface. So imagine if a dancer was dancing on moving platforms. And then imagine if the moving platforms were slippery, you know, snake skin with water on it, and not only that, fire coming out of his mouth. So what a dance. To see Krishna dancing on Kaliya, that would be something, huh? That would be something. And Sanatana Goswami says in the spiritual world that Krishna dances with the gopis on Kaliya. So if any of you are gopis, then you get to dance with Krishna on Kaliya also. So any other pastimes related to water? Yes? Huh? The
boat
leela. The boat leela. Oh, very nice. The leela on Manasiganga has a number of boat leelas. Gopal Bhatta Goswami tells a boat leela just with Radha and Krishna. When Krishna is offering to take Radharani's butter and milk products to Mathura to help her sell them. And then, of course, there's a storm and etc. Yes, but the boat leela with all the gopis, where they don't know it's Krishna. With the story told by Gopal Bhatta, Radharani knows it's Krishna. But the other story, they don't know it's Krishna. They just think it's an old boatman. And he says, don't get in my boat. It's not a very good boat. They say, well, we don't have any other boat. And this can remind us, actually, whenever you see a boat, you can think about how that... Krishna is often causing the troubles that he's solving. Yes? So Krishna was causing all those troubles with the boat just so he could solve them and be the hero. He's so funny. Okay, what other pastimes in relationship to water?
Krishna steals the clothes of the gopis.
Oh, Krishna stealing the clothes of the gopis in the Jamuna. Very nice, yes. In province or over, he was diamond. Yes, you're all Rajvasis here. Other pastimes in relation to water.
When Rani would hide behind lotuses.
Oh, okay.
Krishna will be difficult for him to find her because her face is like a lotus, her fragrance is like a lotus.
Oh, my. So. And Krishna hides in the blue lotuses and they can't find him either. Very nice. Okay, what about Matsya? In the water? Matsya avatar? Seisha, who's lying, of course, in the water? Now, we could say Kurma, although he's in the ocean of milk, but that's still liquid. Okay, we're going to go into fire. There's many more pastimes with water. We're going to go into fire. And with fire, looking at fire's qualities, we're going to divide them into heat and light. So first we're going to look at heat and how heat reminds us of Krishna, and then light. So heat is invisible. So there's heat in this room, but I can't see it. And this is like Krishna, you can't see it. You can't see Krishna. Sutre Mani Ganahiva. He's the thread under the pearls. So you see the pearls, you just see the pearls. Like I'm looking at your neck beads. I just see the wood. So how do I know that there's a string?
It sticks together.
Because they stay together. But I don't see the string. So when I am noticing heat, I don't see the heat. I can remember that Krishna is like that, invisible. And again, heat is very powerful. We notice all these elements are very powerful. So heat is so powerful that it can transform things instantly. In the same way, Krishna, although invisible, is very powerful. And then heat is causing other things to move. Heat is moving the air. You know, the birds, they fly on the thermals. Air. So the bird, they try to catch the hot air and ride on it. And it's the heat that's causing the whole water cycle. It's heat that's evaporating the water and causing the rain. In the same way, Krishna is moving everything. You don't see him, but he's the one that's, like Prabhupada in his very last days, he was translating Bhagavatam, saying everything is moving and acting under the direction of Krishna. And heat is exciting. That's how it cooks. That's why heat cooks. You put the food on the fire, and the heat excites the molecules, and they start jumping around, right? And that's why you put water on the fire, and pretty soon it's going out of the pot. It gets so excited. So Krishna is also very exciting. As soon as we find out about Krishna, we start moving out of our material life, right? Moving up to the spiritual sky, and heat is transforming the texture and the taste. You take a piece of broccoli and you put it over the heat, you know, or a potato or anything. The texture changes. It softens and the flavor comes out. So when we're in touch with Krishna also, we change. When you think about Krishna's flute also changes the nature of things. So whenever we're cooking, we can remember how Krishna and his flute, they change the nature of things. They can change our nature. Instead of being demoniac, to change us back to a nice, soft, and sweet devotee. And of course, Krishna says he's the fire of digestion. That's a chemical fire. But digestion is one of the main sources of our health. Whether or not we have good health is dependent on how we digest. So when we eat, we shouldn't just eat like an animal. You know, we can actually meditate. Krishna, you're the fire of digestion. Many years ago, when I was going to Vrindavan, I got very sick on the airplane, and I just couldn't seem to get better. I was just sick and sick and sick. And I was taking medicine. The medicine wasn't doing anything. And finally, I said, Krishna, you're the fire of digestion. You please digest this medicine and make me well. And then almost immediately, I got better. So one should meditate on Krishna as the fire of digestion. And of course, Krishna is always often compared in the process of bhakti to burning up our ignorance, burning up our sinful activities. And when we see that fire is burning, the sun is burning, you can remember how Krishna is eradicating. We talk about the fried seeds of material desire, that when you have seeds and you fry them, they won't sprout. So whenever we're frying spices or grains, you can remember that Krishna is the heat that is frying all of our material life. And of course, we associate heat with life. If something's alive, it's warm. Whenever we feel the warmth in our own bodies, or if we're touching the body of someone else and feeling their warmth, We can remember Krishna says, I am the heat and fire. And how warm Krishna is. Many years ago, one devotee gave a video to the Gurukula of propaganda from the atheistic scientists. And they said, the origin of the universe is a cold, impersonal machine. That's what they said. I thought, no, Krishna is very warm. So life means warmth. Krishna as the life of all that lives. He is the most warm. And we associate warmth also with love. We talk about someone giving a warm embrace or a cold look, right? So whenever we experience warmth, we can meditate on how Krishna is alive and Krishna is full of love. Then looking at the qualities of light. So light gives us knowledge. We can see things. We gain knowledge to a large extent through our eyes. And of course, Krishna is saying, Gyana Dipena Bhasvata. I light up the heart with the light of knowledge. We call spirituality being enlightened. And there's many descriptions of Krishna's effulgence like that, lighting up everything. Even the effulgence from his toenails described when Krishna puts his lotus feet on a jeweled footrest. It turns all white from the light from his toenails. And we associate light not only with knowledge, but with welcome. If guests are coming, you turn on the lights. Whenever we see light, we can meditate on how Krishna is welcoming us. Please come home. We also associate lights with festivals. So every culture, every country of the world has festivals and holidays where they use lights. Fireworks or candles or some kind of light for festivity. Whenever we see light, we can remember that it says in the Bhagavatam that in the spiritual world, every day is a festival. Also, of course, light is the source of all food. Everything we're eating is simply light. This is an interesting thing to meditate on when you're eating. Not only Krishna as the fire of digestion, but all of our food is transformed sunlight. Right? Our food is nothing but transformed sunlight, a little bit of earth minerals, and some water. And really, this light has been transformed into plants, which then gets transformed into fingernails and skin and hair, and this is all transformed light. That's pretty amazing. And Krishna also says, I am the light of the sun. I am the light of the sun. I am the light of the moon. So what we are eating is really Krishna. Isn't that amazing? We can try meditating on that next time we eat. And then light can also be very cooling, like the light of the moon. We have so many descriptions of how, like, Lord Nityananda's is cooling as millions of moons. Koti San Chandra Sushitala. Right? Krishna's face is compared to a moon. He's called Krishna Chandra. All the different, his cheeks are compared to moons, his forehead to a half moon, his fingernails to moons, his eyes to moons. And then, of course, there's a light in our eyes. Many years ago, I remember reading about this man who had a job killing predator animals for the United States government, killing the animals that would eat livestock like coyotes and mountain lions and wolves. And one time he took his 10-year-old son with him when he was going out checking the traps to find the animals. And as they went to one trap, there was a mountain lion in the trap that was still alive.
What is a mountain lion?
Mountain lion. Oh, what's another name? I don't know if there's another name for a mountain lion.
Like a lion or like...
It's a big cat. It's not as big as a lion or a tiger. Probably about this big.
Maybe some panther or sphinx.
Huh?
Sphinx?
Anyway,
I don't know. It's some big predator cat. You can look it up later. Mountain lion. So they're big, it's probably about as big as a leopard, probably about the same size as a leopard, but doesn't have any spots. So they had found this mountain lion in the trap that was still alive. And the man wrote that as my son and I watched, we saw the light go out of its eyes. We saw it die. And he said, we saw the light go out of its eyes. He said, after that time, I gave up my job and started working instead for the preservation of these species. So there's a light in our eyes when we're alive. And this light also we associate with light and with love. like Bhaktivinoda has this song, Prema Pardipa Aratik Tomar. I will offer you Artik with the light of my love. So whenever someone looks at us with affection, we can also remember how Krishna is full of love. And light, of course, fire reminds us of Krishna's six opulences of beauty, because it's through fire that we see form. And so Krishna is the most attractive. He's the source of all colors within the fire, within the sunlight are all colors. And Krishna's form glistens like a mirror. It's often described that his makara earrings, as they're swinging near his sapphire color cheeks, that the cheeks act like a mirror, and one can see the makara earrings reflected in Krishna's cheek. And in fact, his everything glistens. This is nicely explained, I believe, in Lord Shiva's song to the Prachetas, where he says that everything about the Lord is glistening like a mirror, brilliant and colors of Krishna's beautiful form. And what are some pastimes related to fire?
Swallowing the forest fire.
Swallowing the forest fire. So, of course, there's two forest fires, one on the bank of the Yamuna after the chastisement of Kaliya, and the other in the Ichikatavan forest when the cows wander off. Some other pastimes in relationship to fire. I like that one. Yes, there was that demon Maya that Krishna Arjuna saved from the forest fire. Wow. Thank you. I never would have thought of that one. Any more? Yes?
When Sita comes back.
Oh, and this is also for Sita's appearance day. Oh, that's not such a nice one. We've been meditating on not nice ones about Sita, how she goes into the earth, how she goes through the fire. Right? It was recently, of course, Ram Navami. And when I was telling the Ramayana, you could see some of the devotees in the audience when I talked about Sita going through the fire. They just started cringing, you know. And one of them started crying. And, so, yes, Sita has to go through the fire. Wow, thank you. Very nice, Sita's appearance day. Oh, look at all these leelas with fire. Hanuman, yes, setting the city of Lanka on fire. Actually, I'm reading the Ramayana right now. I just read that recently. Yes?
Deepavali.
Deepavali. Okay, all of the lamps lighted. Very nice. Okay, we're going to go on to, there's many more. I'm going to go on to air. So with air is very subtle. Very subtle. I mean, I can feel heat at least, but unless the air is moving, I can't feel it at all. It's very subtle. So Krishna is the most subtle. He's the most subtle. Shukshma. Brahmanas is called Shukshma. The most fine, the most subtle. And air is putting pressure. I should sometime write this in metric. I should write it on my notes in metric. Note, write it on your notes in metric. But I know in American measurement, it's 14 pounds of pressure for every square inch of your body. So for every little piece of your body, there's probably, what's that, about 5 kilograms of pressure from the air. But we don't feel it. We're not aware of it. So Krishna, again, is all around us, but we're not aware of him. Air is visible by its effects. When it moves something, then we see, oh, there's air. So similarly, Krishna is visible by his effects. We know there's God by what he does in the world. And of course, Krishna says he joins with our life air to digest our foodstuff. And in this verse we read today, Arjuna says, Krishna, you are the air. So why don't we meditate for a moment on our breathing? And how that is Krishna. Arjuna says, Krishna, you are the air. And air can move things that appear to be much more substantial than itself. In a windstorm, a bad windstorm, the air can move cars and houses and uproot trees. So although Krishna is the most subtle, still, he can affect anything within this world. And of course, the analogy is given in the Bhagavad Gita that the air moves things without mixing with them. The air moves fragrances and things, but doesn't mix with them. So similarly, Krishna is moving everything in this world, but he's not affected. And then air is our greatest physiological need. So the thing we need the most to survive is air. After that, temperature. So we need first air, then we need heat, and then we need water. But the most essential is air. So just imagine if somebody made a big party for you, a huge party for your birthday or something, right? And they have 100 different preparations, the favorite food, and all your family that you love is there, and your best friends, and they rented a hotel for you. It has the finest, the tables are made of marble, and the plates are made of gold, and then there's entertainers, there's live singers and dancers, and they're giving you gifts, they're giving you thousands of euros, but there's no air. Would you be able to enjoy it? If you're in a room without air, and someone offers you €1 million, and your favorite food, and the person you love the most is there, and without Krishna, there's nothing. Without Krishna, there's nothing. No matter what there is, as soon as we don't have Krishna, it's nothing. Our capacity even to enjoy materially, without Krishna, it's nothing. And just like we're talking about the water dancing, so the air also makes other things dance. Kavi Karnapur often talks about how the creepers in Vrindavan are dancing at the direction of their teacher, the wind. So whenever we see, just yesterday, I was just in trance. I was looking out my window, and there was this, the wind was moving one of the trees in the sunlight. So it looked, the tree was shimmering, and it looked like it was full of diamonds from the sun. So imagine Krishna dancing. As a little boy, Krishna dances for the elderly gopis. When he's a little older, he dances with the cowherd boys, and then of course he dances with the gopis. And air, of course, reminds us of Krishna's opulence of strength. So a very strong person, Hanuman, right? And Madhvacharya, they're the sons of Vayu and Bhima. The air is known for strength. Whenever we see the blowing of the air, we can be reminded on how Krishna is so strong. So what are some pastimes related to air?
Bhima.
Trinavarta, okay, yes, another one. Krishna playing his flute. Some other ones. Oh, there was wind also in the Govardhan Lila. Yes. Very nice. Krishna breathing out the universes. So, do we have time for space? It's 9 o'clock. Should we stop here or should we go into space?
Space.
Just space. I'm not going to do mind, intelligence, and ego. I have the notes, but I've never spoken on them. Should I do space or no? You want to do space? Okay. So we'll go through it quickly. So space is very interesting. So there was about 6 or 7 years when I didn't have any kind of a home or base at all. I was just traveling. I had some boxes at a devotee's house in London, but I didn't have any home. And all of a sudden, I became aware of how important where you live is to most people. I mean, it didn't end up being important to me. I was fine and happy without a home. But it was quite interesting. I found out that strangers felt perfectly comfortable to ask you, where do you live? Anybody you met anywhere would say, where do you live? Or where are you from? To ask you, what is your name? What is your occupation? Are you married? That was a little bit... You don't ask a stranger. But you can ask a stranger, where do you live? Anybody, anywhere, would ask that question. And I never noticed it until I didn't have an answer. I wasn't aware of it. And when I didn't have an answer, I became aware that people ask that question all the time. And when you don't have an answer for them, they become very bewildered. So where do you live? I don't live anywhere. No, but where do you stay? I don't, I just travel. But when you're not traveling, where do you stay? I don't. I'm just traveling. Well, where do you spend most of your time? Which month? Which year? So it's always changing where I spend most of my time. And people would get so confused. And it really fascinated me. And I realized that if we want to understand something, the first thing we need to do is find out where it goes in space. That's our first question about anyone or anything. Where does it belong? Where is its place? Space defines everything. Everything is defined by space. In the same way, Krishna defines everything. One cannot know the meaning of anything, the value of anything, the identity of anything, unless one knows its relationship to Krishna. And then space is understood very differently at different levels of consciousness. So if there's a little insect on the windowsill over there, so that little insect's understanding of the space of this room is very different from ours. And if the little insect is looking out the window, it cannot understand that the driveway leads to the road and the road connects you to other parts of Germany and other parts of Europe. Or even a little child, a little baby, before they can crawl, before they can move. If you go from one room to another room, they start crying hysterically because they think you've just disappeared. Right? They don't understand that when you walk out that door, it goes, you're still in the house. You've dropped out of existence. So the little baby's understanding of space is very different. Similarly, depending on our level of consciousness, how we understand Krishna is very different. Krishna is Krishna. But my capacity to understand Krishna depends on my own consciousness. And then it's described in Bhagavatam that everything comes from space. We could really talk about space for quite some time. It's quite interesting. What is space? But from space comes gases. From gases comes radiant energy. From radiant energy comes liquid. From liquids comes solid. In the same way, everything comes from Krishna. Everything comes from Krishna. So of Krishna's six opulences, space reminds us of Krishna's what? Krishna says this himself in the Bhagavad Gita. I am detached just like the sky. So space reminds us of Krishna's renunciation. In fact, space gives us a feeling of freedom. People like to go drive their car on the open road and feel free, right? Or you go to some place where there's not very many trees, you go to the ocean or some open horizon. Oh, I'm free, I have space. We even feel this way in our own room, you know, when you take things off a shelf and you have some space, you feel a sense of freedom. So Krishna's renunciation. And in fact, this is the greatest of the six opulences, is renunciation. Did you know that? Without renunciation, none of the other opulences are very nice. If someone's beautiful but they're proud, it's not so attractive. And what's really attractive is someone who's renounced and humble. The neutrality of the super soul. Now we're talking about in the evening, Krishna's walking away from the Rasalila. Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. When Mahaprabhu leaves Jagannath Puri to go on a South Indian tour, the devotees are fainting and he just walks away. So then, of course, also, just like earth reminded us of Krishna's abode and water, Krishna's pastimes and fire, Krishna's form. So, yeah, the space reminds us of Krishna's name, because it's sound that's connected with space. So all kinds of sound, of course, Krishna says, I am the sound in ether, the absolute nature of Krishna's name, the varieties of Krishna's name. And what are some pastimes related to space? Oh, how he moves everybody at night. All of a sudden they wake up in Dwarka, yeah. Yes.
He's going to Mahavishnu
Arjuna. Oh, very nice. Krishna and Arjuna, they go on the chariot through space to Mahavishnu.
Basically, all the pastimes, I mean, just Krishna going to the forest.
Krishna's moving through space, going through the forest. Okay, all of Krishna's pastimes where he's going from one place to another.
Jagannath is always moving to Vrindavan.
Jagannath moving to Vrindavan.
Krishna moving.
Yes.
The lotus is opening and closing.
And then Vrindavan, right? The lotus opening and closing. Any pastimes where Krishna really uses space in an unusual way? What about when he's in the circle and all the cowherd boys think he's looking at them? They all think he's faced, like, I can look at you, but then I'm not looking at you. I mean, I kind of see you out of my peripheral vision. But Krishna's looking straight at all the cowherd boys at the same time. That's a very unusual use of space, even those who are behind him. And then there's that story where Brahma comes to visit Krishna, and he sees all the Brahmas there, and each Brahma thinks Krishna's only in my universe. So how does he do that?
Vamande.
Okay, also all of space within his body. Okay, so this is just a little. Obviously, we could do so much more. And we're working right now on making this into a book. That's going to be Krishna willing. That's going to be illustrated with photographs and drawings. And the part I'm just starting to work on now, I mean, I just actually started it last night, is going the other direction. So like here we started with the material elements, going from there to remind us of Krishna's qualities. Then I also want a section of the book where we start with Krishna's qualities and how those remind us of something in our life. So like Krishna's very fluent in all languages, Krishna's very clever, Krishna's very artistic, and how those remind us of aspects of our life in the world. So we've gone way over time. Does anyone have a question that we'll have a fast answer?
When devotee asked, what will be the name of that book?
Oh, I don't know. We don't have the name yet. We don't have the name. Right now we're at the probably of 10 steps. We're on step 3. So I don't have a name yet. Probably something like finding the divine in the mundane, something like that. I don't know. Yes?
I mean, it's very nice, thank you. It's really like a very deep presentation on all those elements. I mean, there are many things we have heard about, like Krishna's taste of water, and we know about this possibility to connect Krishna with everything, but very, very often we are not conscious of this, so it's just... It's a theoretical concept.
Well, that's why I want to do this book. See, I'm thinking to do this book, that one meditation per page with a photo or an illustration. And then every day you open your book, or, you know, we'll put it electronically too. And just for that day, what are you going to meditate on? So that day I'm going to meditate on that Krishna is air whenever I breathe. And that's what I'm going to do that day. And then the next day, you take another meditation. And it's like anything else, that when you practice it, it becomes habitual and it becomes natural. So we have a tendency to say, I'm going to wait for it to just happen. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, don't do that. So you can, I mean, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 7th, 9th, 10th, and 15th chapter, particularly, Krishna talks about how he's there in the world. Then, of course, in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, where there's a description of the universal form, or just this morning I was reading in the 7th canto, what chapter would it be? 12th? I think it's the 12th chapter, where it was describing the activities of the vanaprastas, and how when the vanaprasta gets too old and sick to do their duties, that they should fast until death, and then they merge the different parts of their body and mind back into the material elements. And what was really interesting was it was the reverse of the universal form that was in the second canto. You know, your legs back into Vishnu, your hands back into Indra. You know, everything was just, you were going reversing everything. So you pick one of these, and pick one per day, and say, okay, I'm going to meditate on this today. And even if you only meditate on it 2 minutes that day, well, that's 2 minutes. And gradually it increases and increases and increases. Yes?
I'm just now thinking, like, we have these elements which are actually all around us, and we are non-stop in connection with Krishna. But I'm still thinking, yes, like, one's praying and thankful to do all these things, but to connect really to Krishna, for me it's much easier when I'm hearing about his person, his name, fame, pastime. It's not so much taste to think of Krishna, like, I mean...
But both need to be there. Yeah. Both need to be there. Prabhupada talked about that, that the devotee is very happy in the material world. He says in chapter 20 of Krishna book that the non-devotees see the world as very aggressive, but the devotees are happily situated. And then there's one lecture where Prabhupada says that if somebody shows you their garden, oh, I've made this nice garden, and you say, oh, it's all false, they'll be depressed. He said, so don't depress Krishna. It's really funny. Don't make Krishna depressed. But you can meditate on Krishna's form and pastimes. And that's just what we just did. That's exactly what we did.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So, you know, if when you're looking at the stream in the back, it's not just that you have to be a thank you Krishna for the water, but you can be meditating on how Krishna goes swimming every day. Meditate, have the water be an udipan, an impetus, just like Mukunda saw the peacock fan fanning the king, and immediately he thought of Krishna. So the idea is not so much to meditate on the universal form, that's not so interesting to us, although that's also there, but rather to have everything in the material world, which is also Krishna's energy, act as a stimulus or an udipan for remembering the personal form of the Lord. Otherwise, we're making this dichotomy of good and bad. We're getting this duality. That may be helpful in the beginning. So when you go to a materialistic person who thinks everything is matter, so you say, oh, okay, no, everything isn't matter. There's matter in spirit. That's good in the beginning. But gradually you want to come to the point, everything is Krishna, everything is Krishna's energy. Everything connects me with Krishna. It's not that this world is just some, you know, just dukkhalayam, just a miserable place, and I just have to tolerate it here, and then I can go to heaven, you know. And Prabhupada says, for the devotee, everything is happily situated. Actually, Bhavananda recently told me in Mayapur, as a year or two ago, he said, do you know what Prabhupada said my name means? And I said, oh, like Bhava Ananda, the happiness of Bhava, of emotion, of love for Krishna. He said, no. He said, Prabhupada told me it was Bhavananda, the happiness of preaching in the material world. It's like, whoa. So that's, we want to come to that level. Then when we see the trees dancing in the wind and the sunlight, we think of how Krishna's dancing. And when he's dancing, his ornaments are glittering. Yes? When we take a walk in the woods, and we're, oh, it's so satisfying, so peaceful, just be in the earth. How peaceful is it just to be in Krishna? Just you wash your face in the morning. Oh, so refreshing. Oh, Krishna is so refreshing. Why not? This is the real meaning of Achinchabeda Beda Tattva. That's a practical application. Achinchabeda Beda Tattva is not just some philosophy for scholars to sit around and debate. It's something to experience. When you breathe, when you digest, when you wash your face, when you walk on the earth, when you see the expanse of sky. And there's Krishna. And if you meditate like that, Krishna will reciprocate with you. You'll feel that the air is Krishna, and the digestive fire is Krishna, and the sky is, you'll feel, you'll experience it. It won't be theoretical. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.